Natural Resources. We have four lawyers making presentations, and I will read quickly who is appearing and in what order, and then a rebuttal. We have Mr. Schreiner at the podium, 15 minutes representing APCA. John Green, Assistant Attorney General, 15 minutes representing DNR. John Kastner from the Builders Association, representing the Builders Association and the Realtors, I assume. And 15 minutes for William O'Connor, representing the Wisconsin Association of Lakes. And in the same order, we have 5 minutes of rebuttal from each. Is that right, gentlemen? Okay. You may proceed, Mr. Schreiner.
Thank you. Chief Justice Abrahamson, may it please the court. My name is Tom Schreiner. I represent the Abbey Harbor Condominium Association, which is the Association of Owners of Condominium Units at the Abbey Harbor. My colleague, Wally Arts, represents the Abbey developer, APCA, and she and I have agreed that I will argue on behalf of both of us this morning. Honors, I was interested to see on the website a copy of which, the court's website, a copy of which was available in the clerk's office this morning, a description of this as a complicated case. And I guess the size of the brief suggests that it's true. The length of the record suggests that's true. But I want to submit to you that as important as it is, and I think it's probably one of the more important cases, certainly in the area of property law and water rights law, that the court will hear this year, it is really at its heart a very simple case, because it is about the interaction of two fairly well-established sets of law, which, as so often happens in cases that end up in this court, it decides only important cases, are thought to be in conflict, and you have to sort out where they are. The one of them is the rights of riparian landowners. Riparian landowners, of course, being people who own property next to a body of navigable water. For 150 years, it has been very clear in this state that a riparian owns not only the land on the bank, RIPA, the bank, but as well a right of access to the water, to use the water for the purpose for which people who live next to the water want to use the water, whether it's fishing, swimming, or more importantly, for our purposes today, to launch a boat.
Counsel, that's a right of access, not a right of exclusive access.
A right of access that belongs to the riparian. It is exclusive of others who would wish to cross the upland, as we call the property next to the bank, in order to get access to the water. It is exclusive in the riparian. And again, this court very clearly in the case that we can't agree on the pronunciation of Damel versus Jantz, 1923, which looks to me like it was a test case of somebody walking around Lake Winnebago, said these are valuable rights. They've always been rights. I think the most interesting case for me is the one that goes back to before the Civil War, the U.S. Supreme Court case, Yates versus the City of Milwaukee, which we've cited, where exactly this thing happened. Somebody had a commercial property right where the Menominee River runs into the Milwaukee, and was not able to get a pier, wanted to have a pier to go out to unload goods into the warehouse that was there, and build a pier. And then the City of Milwaukee decided that it would try to declare that a nuisance and remove it. And the Supreme Court of the United States, interpreting Wisconsin law as it used to in those days, said, it's clear that the right of access to the water by a riparian is an important right. It is a valuable right. And certainly one of the things I think, if you would read the Court of Appeals opinion, you would think it was a new thing that so much of the value of a riparian right consists in access to the water by the riparian. But I submit to you there are lots of places up north where the structure on the land isn't worth very much. And the owners would be astounded to learn that they had their right of access to the water, their right to put a pier in the water in order to launch a boat, by sufferance. Now, It is subject, and we, again, this is well established, that the right of access to the water of the riparian is subject to paramount public rights. That's been established for a very long time, and as recently as last term, this court's R.W. Knox case was decided on that basis, that where the public rights expressed in the public trust doctrine, and I'll say expressed, although it's all common law, in the public trust doctrine, come into conflict with the riparian's right of access to the water, the public trust rights prevail. And that's really what we get down to here. The public trust rights began, expressed in Article 9 of the Constitution, in terms of, you know, being able to float logs down the rivers in order to get them to sawmills. It was concerned with commercial navigation. Long ago, this court expanded it, but it has always kept it within navigation and its incidents. And therefore, we have these cases, again, going back to the turn of the last century, about duck hunting. You know, can I get access to a landlocked lake in order to do duck hunting? And the court said, not unless you pay for the right to go across. You have the right, theoretically, to be on that body of water and duck hunting, but that right does not include a right across privately owned land in order to get to it. The Diana Hunting Club was really the mirror image of the same case. Somebody floated down a navigable stream and was duck hunting in his boat on the water, and the Diana Hunting Club, Shooting Club, whatever it was called, had owned the land on both sides and said that they tried to sue for trespass, and the Shooting Club lost, because you do have that right in the state as a public trust, because the state owns the water and the bed of a lake. Little difference on navigable streams, but not much, in trust for the public to protect rights of access to use the water. But that's what's important about this. The public right has always been a right of use of water.
Counsel?
Yes,
ma'am. Sorry. There are three issues in this case.
There are.
Which ones are you going to argue?
I am going to argue, if I may, the public trust doctrine's supposed incompatibility with the condominium ownership and the legislative authority under 30.12. I really think they're the same argument. I'm not going to talk about waiver because, frankly, nobody has tried to defend the Court of Appeals' opinion on waiver. And I'm not going to talk, unless you have questions, about the takings case, because if I win, I don't have to worry about a takings. And I just assume not think about that. It's a complicated issue. And I do think, just to get my plug in on takings, that if the conclusion were that the private landowner had to allow someone to cross his land in order to get to the water, there would be a taking in the Loretto sense, that is, the actual physical invasion categorical taking case.
Now, by winning, you mean that the DNR has no authority to require a new permit and has no authority to ask you to set aside any of these slips.
That is what I mean by winning.
Public. Okay. Now, suppose you were a brand new organization with raw riparian rights and land, no slips, and you wanted 400 slips.
Right.
And you were doing a docominium, and there are docominiums in this state, as I understand.
There are marina properties and riparian properties owned in condominium form. Indeed, I'm going to quibble with docominiums. I don't know what a docominium is.
Condominium.
Certainly not
relating
your
to the slips.
Lake Geneva.
Condominiums relating to the slips.
Right.
Are they attached to any living units?
Some are, and some are not. There are both kinds, and again, they're in the record, and this was developed at the administrative hearing, but there are both kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And, Your Honor, I will answer the question. I do believe that absent some authority from the legislature, of which there is none, and I always find it interesting to listen sometimes to the preceding argument, which you missed, Chief Justice, about, you know, there were several questions asked. Where has the legislature said? And while there was a lot of disagreement, both sides agreed what the legislature said was important, that the legislature set policy on public records. And in this state, the legislature, as this court has held, is the trustee of the public trust. It is the primary agent of the public trust. It has delegated certain authority to the DNR, but it is the one that speaks, as it does on many things. It is the one that can exercise the public trust doctrine. It also, as we know, has broad police powers. Our point is it hasn't exercised any of those there. And if somebody wanted to develop a condominium on Roth land, Your Honor, I would think, in all truth, that the question would be public trust questions, absent any different legislation from the legislature, is there anything that precludes, in the public trust doctrine, building such a condominium? Now, I don't know the particular situation, because the public trust doctrine is always very geography specific. It's always very, it always asks, what does the lake look like, and what's the configuration, and how much capacity is there? I think that there is a public trust interest in the capacity of the lake, for example. I think lakes can be overdeveloped, and I think it is legitimate in exercising the right of permit for the Department of Natural Resources to say that we don't have room on this lake for 400 docks because we don't have room for 400 permanent boats. Now, it's important, I think, to recognize that isn't this case, but that would be a navigation-related incident of the public trust doctrine. And it isn't this case for a couple of reasons. Not only is the 407 slip marina already there, but the 407 slip marina wouldn't have been there but for the fact that the Public Service Commission, the predecessor to the DNR, issued a permit to dredge what was basically a swamp on the edge of Lake Geneva. This marina actually isn't on Lake Geneva, as many of you may be familiar with it. It's a dredged out natural lagoon on what was once Pottawatomie Creek, a little bit of which is still there, and it allows access to Lake Geneva. Clearly, the thought was that it would be commercially beneficial to put this marina there in order, and that there was room on Lake Geneva for 407 slips ultimately. No one has ever suggested that changed. Nothing about the ownership form of the property has ever changed that. And that really, as simply as I can state it, and I've got a very short time and I'm already on the warning line, and it troubles me, but I can't do anything about it, is about as simple a statement as I can make. This was always been privately owned property. It's been operated as a marina. It has never been a condition to any permit that the property be rented. The legislature has never expressed a preference for rental over private ownership. And I will say just one point, why that preference for rental over private ownership is even in the public interest, I think, is really debatable. Because before this condominium conversion, one owner decided who got to rent the 407 slips. Now there would be, had this not been stopped, 407 owners, each of whom is free to sell or free to rent. It's clear in the record from testimony that there is no economic difference. If there is any, it's actually in the advantage of the owner because you get back certain tax incidents of ownership rather than renting.
Mr. Schreiner, yes? If the Department of Natural Resources has the authority under 3012, right, to require permits in this situation, what is the worst case scenario for you?
On this particular case or generally with respect to the law of the state?
In this case.
Well, I think in this case, the worst case is that they simply say these properties all have to be, the condominiumization has to be undone, and that this transaction has to go back, and that you basically, APCA, own your property as a public utility subject to regulation. Unlike any other public utility, there's no grant of a monopoly, and there's no guarantee.
Could the department somehow reduce the number of slips from 407 to a smaller number?
Well, I don't. Here's what I get back to this point, Justice Brasser. I don't know where that comes from. I mean, there's no suggestion that the water body can't sustain 407 people access. The real heart of this, I think, is somehow a sense that renters and non-riparians are the public and riparians aren't the public.
But if you started out, this goes to the Chief Justice's question, if you started out from scratch, raw land, would you qualify for 407 slopes?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know the answer, why not, I guess is the question. Where would be the authority? Where has the legislature suggested that it has a problem on raw land that would sustain 407 slips in having those owned in condominium form as opposed to being in a so-called public marina and subject to rental? The fact is that the 407 slips have been approved. It's consistent with the village's ordinance. It has been in place and nothing has changed except the form of ownership. A form of ownership that the legislature has said in an expression of policy like the one talked about in the last argument that isn't directly applicable but is certainly useful. It is at least an expression of legislative policy. You shall not discriminate against the condominium form of ownership. And yet that's exactly what's happened here. The DNR has decided on its own, that rental property is better than condominium property.
Mr. Schreiner, what did the administrative law judge use as a justification for the numbers that he selected, the 287 and I think 120?
There is something called a guidance that is issued by the DNR that is not a rule, and they're very careful that it's not a rule because they haven't gone through a rulemaking, that looks at the shoreline. Now, the Wisconsin Realtors Association argued that the guidance is an illegal attempt at a rule, and we think they're right, because it looks only at the length of the shoreline and divides up the shoreline. On that point, Your Honor, I would say that shoreland zoning is, in this state, under a different chapter of the statutes, delegated to municipalities. And the local village here, the village of Fontana on the lake, has approved the 407 slips. It is consistent with a plan approved by the village, and they actually supported the conversion to condominium.
Mr. Schreiner, as I read your brief, and as I listen to your argument, it seems to me your position is that the DNR has authority to issue permits for piers and can make that determination as to the appropriate use of this navigable water.
Okay. It does, based on public trust concepts, yes.
But that the DNR has no authority to determine whether that use be by owners or renters or condominiums or long-term 99 years or joint tenancy or tenancy in common or marital property or anything else. That DNR can only say, you can put in the pier or you can't put in the pier. They can't tell you how the ownership is. Is that your position?
You've got my point exactly. They can tell you that the pier, there's a problem there because of buildup of siltage or something of that sort, that it interferes with navigation. But where in the world does the DNR become the repository of authority on the form of ownership under property law? That's our position.
That would be new piers, old piers.
Any kind of piers.
Middle-aged piers.
That's right.
Mr. Sharp.
Sorry.
I have waterfront property.
We should reveal that. I do
too. I'm sure lots of people.
And I'm thinking of a condominium after this case.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of. Can I take? I have a dock.
I know.
Can I condominiumize or whatever the word is, and essentially allow 15-20 people have access to my dock and put their boats at that dock, build a nice long dock? Do I have the authority to do that?
No, not unless you would have the authority to do the same thing as a non-condominium owner. I think you wouldn't.
I certainly did not go to the DNR. Maybe I shouldn't confess this, but I didn't go to the DNR to get a permit for my dock.
There are certain
That's
docks.
Because it's not permanent.
There are certain docks of a certain size, as I understand it, that do not require a permit. But here's that is exactly, if I may say, the problem with this case, with the DNR's position in this case. Let's say you've got a dock. Let's not make it 15. Let's say you've got a dock that's got two boat slips on it, one on each side. That's not unusual. You see one all the time. What if the DNR is to decide, you know, there really ought to be more public access on your lake? And so from now on, you really can only use one for yourself. You better rent the other one and let people get access across your property to use it, because that would be in the public interest. It's the same principle. There's no logical drawing line. It differentiates that situation from the one that is present in the act.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Green, Assistant Attorney General Green, representing the DNR.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is John Green. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I'm here today representing the Department of Natural Resources. Like Mr. Schreiner, I intend to focus on the two issues that have been contested in the case and rely upon the briefs for the waiver issue. There are essentially three schools of thought represented by the parties here. APCA's position is that DNR can say nothing at all about the conversion of a large marina into dockmeniums. It has no statutory authority. They want to treat dockmenium owners better than any other private riparian. What they want is to retain over three times the number of boat slips than any other private riparian would be entitled to. The administrative law judge determined that based upon that frontage and all the usual factors that go into those decisions, they're entitled to no more than 120 slips. They want 407. At the other end of the spectrum is the Lakes Association, which takes the view that dockmeniums are illegal per se. They would ban them outright, and therefore, I think, treat them worse than other riparians. DNR's approach from the very beginning has been to try to treat dockmenium owners the same as other similar riparians, no better and no worse. That is, they ought to get exactly what their neighbor next door with the same frontage has in terms of their number of slips. That's what the DNR decision represents.
Could I ask you, what changes in ownership authorize, what changes in ownership trigger permitting process in the DNR? In other words, let's say I had won the lottery last week and I went to APCA and simply bought the whole thing myself. Would I have to have new permits?
Well, I think that gets to the heart of the question, Justice Prosser. The change in ownership itself doesn't mean anything. DNR could care less if APCA had sold to someone else, had sold to a corporation, a partnership, whatever. It wouldn't make any difference at all as long as the marina stays as a marina. Because what DNR has allowed it to do is have 407 slips available for rental to non-riparian boaters. So the idea that mere change in ownership has somehow triggered DNR's authority is not true. The form of ownership is not the critical component. The critical component is the fact that instead of 407 rental slips, now we're going to have zero. Now, if you go from 407 to zero, you're no longer a marina. You're no longer serving the public at large, the non-riparian public. You're reserving that exclusively for the riparian's use. Well, that's fine. They can do that if they want. But if they choose to do that, if they don't want to rent any more slips, then they have to be limited to what a private riparian is entitled to, no more and no less. And that was
that. Pardon? What is the private riparian entitled to?
Well, what I mean by that is a riparian that wants to exercise their riparian rights exclusively for themselves, not let any member of the public in.
How many docks can I put on my land? I have 600 feet of frontage.
Well, it depends upon the circumstances. I mean, there are some rough guidelines that the DNR follows, but then in each case it depends upon the lake. You know, is there sensitive habitat there? What is the stress on the lake? What are the neighbors doing? There's all kinds of factors that go into that.
I wanted to put 10 docks on my lake, on my frontage. Would I have to go to the DNR for a permit?
You may, yes.
I might.
You might. If you want to keep your one or two, the typical configuration, probably no. Those are generally exempt from permitting.
Council
Green, since this is sort of true confessions, let me confess my situation and try out my situation on you in terms of the DNR's position. We own a condo along with 21 other couples that own condos in this particular development. There is a pier that goes out with 22 boat slips. That pier is basically where Lake Mendota and the Yahara River come together. Now, could the DNR somewhere down the line, perhaps with a transfer of ownership of one of the condos, come in and say, you can no longer have 22 boat slips, you can only have 17, you can only have 18? Because here, what they've done is said you can no longer have 407 boat slips, even though that was in the original permit. You can now have 120, and the rest of them, if you want any more, have to be available to others. What stops the DNR from doing that in my situation?
Well, a mere change in ownership of a unit, I think, would not trigger any kind of DNR action. What triggers it is a change in the character of the structure or a change out on the lake. In the RW Docks case, there was vegetation that developed over a period of years.
What happens if some of the condo owners start renting out their boat slips so that, let's say, instead of 22 being used by individual owners, now you've got 17 and you've got 5 that are rented out? Could the DNR require in the future that there always be at least 5 that will be rented out?
I've never heard of that happening. Generally, the owner of a boat slip has the right to lease it to someone else. That's
how is it different than what's occurring here?
The difference is that since 1962, this has been a marina, the sole purpose of which has been to provide rental access to non-riparian boaters. Now, over the years, they were allowed to build up to 407 slips. For them now to say, well, we're going to eliminate the rental aspect of this, but we want to keep the 407 slips, would be grossly inconsistent with the treatment that all the other riparians have received.
407 slips was with a permit from the DNR, was it not?
Actually, the original permit in 1962 was just a dredging permit.
From the Public Service Commission?
Yes.
Has there ever been a permit from the DNR?
There have been a series of permits through the years for various portions of the facility.
So that you're not saying that the 407 slips are not permitted by these permits that have been issued through the years?
No, and DNR stipulated that at the hearing. And DNR also stipulated that they had no objection to the retention of the 407 slips as long as there was public access accounted for. Because there's a quid pro quo that's inherent in this, and that is, as a riparian, you get your reasonable use. Whatever that may be, however we figure that out, it's going to end up with a number of slips, if that's what we're talking about. You get that. You can exclude the entire world from that. And that's why I think that the takings issue that APTA raises is a non-issue. DNR is not forcing them to give up any of their riparian rights to members of the public. They can take their 120 slips, which has been determined to be their reasonable use, and they can erect a giant fence and have a guard dog and keep everybody out. That's their prerogative. But if they want to exceed their reasonable use, they want to get more than what they are entitled to as the riparian on that frontage, there has to be a countervailing benefit to the public. That's the whole premise of marinas. That's the whole premise of balancing of private and public rights.
Council, under Natural Resources 326.04, dealing with piers, sub 8 indicates that piers associated with marinas, the marinas shall be open to the public, and use of the facility by the public may be conditioned only upon payment of a reasonable mooring or anchoring fee. You've indicated that change of ownership is irrelevant in and of itself here.
Are you is DNR maintaining, the state maintaining, that there has been a change in the status of the marina?
Yes, absolutely. And let me give you an analogy.
Is this still a marina?
Well, I don't think so. If they have their way, no, it won't be a marina. It'll be a privately held, exclusively used boat slip.
And if you have your way, will it still be a marina?
It would be however many rental slips we could get them to agree to beyond the 120, yes, it would still be a partial marina.
Because under the DNR reg, all marinas must be open to the public use. The note goes on to say, as an example, the use of such an extended pier shall not be conditioned upon membership in a private club or organization, purchase of a parcel of property.
Exactly. That's the whole policy behind marinas, because marinas, I think almost always, are large structures, sometimes mammoth structures as they are here, with far more boat slips than any individual for their own use would ever be entitled to. And the trade-off is, you can do that. Marinas serve an important purpose on the lakes, but they have to be open, accessible to the public. That's the whole purpose of the marina concept.
Let me see if I understand this. The DNR's position, as I understand it, is that it provides permits for certain kinds of piers. That in determining the piers and slips, the DNR determines what is a reasonable use by the riparian owner. That that determination will vary depending on whether the riparian owner is using these slips for his or her own use, or whether the riparian owner is running a marina that is public use on a rental basis of some sort. So if I'm willing to run a marina and open up my the use of the I shouldn't say use of the water, but use of the land for the water, that you're going to give me more slips than if you give me a fine close and I'm just going to have an Abrahamson family compound.
Correct. That's the trade-off. If you're, let's say you're entitled to 5 slips, it would be a reasonable use. And you say, we really would like 15 slips. And assuming DNR wants a marina there, they'd say, okay, but you got to make 10 function like a marina.
What is your authority for treating the Abrahamson family compound differently than the Abrahamson marina?
Well, the authority, I think, arises from the many public trust decisions of this court, in which the rights of non-riparians have been recognized and the rights of the public in general have been recognized. And those are the rights that are balanced against the private riparians' rights. So you get your reasonable use. That's all you're entitled to.
And the DNR determines reasonable use.
Yes.
Considering the rights of the public to navigable waters.
Correct.
The use of navigable waters. And this arises from the public doctrine. Trust doctrine does not arise from any particular statute.
Well, the public, as this court has held, the public trust doctrine is incorporated into Chapter 30. So the provisions of Chapter 30 bring in that those common law references. This is really similar to the R.W. Dox case the court decided last year. We're talking about the same issues and the same factors. The one difference is that, and this is the distinction with documentiums, is that in the bundle of rights that a property owner has, the problem with the documentium and the risk and the reason that takings is a great concern is because you're pulling one stick out of that bundle to market and convey. The stick that says we have the right to place a structure in the water to access. And not only are you pulling that one stick out, but now in APCA's case, they're chopping it into 400 pieces, and they're selling each little stub of that right for $40,000 to $50,000 a piece. Now, The problem is down the road, if DNR, in the exercise of its public trust responsibility, determines that reasonable use no longer allows that many slips in this area, we're going to be confronted with takings claims. And the problem, unlike RW Docks and the other decision, takings decisions, there's no house, there's no lot, there's no other property there of great value. So the risk is the exposure to takings.
Why is that any different than if you said to an operating arena, we're going to cut your slips in half, and you're really decreasing their business by 50%? Isn't that going to be a taking?
I don't think so. And this is the principle that we're trying to get across. And I know we've stirred up a lot of words and responses, but what we're really saying is the riparians' entitlement and their property interest, and this is discussed in RW Docs, your entitlement stops at reasonable use. So if you're entitled to 10 slips, you can't claim a property interest in 15 slips or 20 slips. And all we want from the court is to clarify that if your reasonable use is 10 and you want 20, you can't require compensation for the extra 10.
If you were going to write the opinion of the court, what would you say?
I would reverse the Court of Appeals because I do not believe that in and of themselves, documentums are necessarily inconsistent with the public trust doctrine.
Okay, so we can have documentums. Okay, what else would you say?
However, I would make it very clear that the purchaser of a documentium unit is taking the risk because all they're really buying is a qualified conditional limited use right, which is subsumed with the use rights of all their fellow co-tenants and co-documentium owners, and that if in the future reasonable use no longer permits the same number of slips and some of the slips are eliminated, those individual owners cannot claim a compensable taking.
Well,
otherwise, DNR has to pay riparians not to exceed their reasonable use.
But what about your power to say we're not going to allow 400 and whatever it is sales of condominiums on these slips? I mean, that's what DNR, the fight is about 287 slips, as I understand it.
Right.
What would you say about that?
About DNR's ability to
say only X number are condos, others are public rent slips.
I would say the DNR clearly has implied authority under the trust doctrine and the statutes to balance the private riparian's interests with the public at large and to decide that, to essentially validate the whole marina concept that it is okay and reasonable to allow greater intrusions into the public's waters than you're otherwise entitled to if there's a quid pro quo for the public access.
If I may ask a question.
Just a site.
I don't have lakefront property, by the way, since you're putting everything on property. I have been waiting, and I have not yet heard any discussion from you about just what the threshold jurisdictional question is in this case, which is, where in the statutes does the DNR derive any authority to require a new permit in this case? I understand your argument to be that we could do this at the back end if we don't have any permitting authority at the front end, but I understand your position to be that we have the authority to require a new permit in this case, and I don't see a statute that says that.
Well, there are multiple paths that could have been taken in this case to arrive at the same result. It wasn't necessary because APCA voluntarily submitted a permit application, and so it was adjudicated through a 30.12 permit proceeding. But if they had not done that, if they had basically said, we don't care what you think, DNR, we're going ahead, DNR could have, A, brought an enforcement action under 30.03. They could have sought to modify or rescind the permit under 30.07, which really just requires there would be good cause to rescind or modify a permit. DNR has to have the ability to change permits. And if you accept APCA's view that they had a permit that authorized these, surely DNR, like almost any other permit that exists, it is subject to oversight and modification.
Well, let me ask this thing. The permitting process itself, somebody who wants, well, I view it as like a building permit. If you're building a house on land, if you want to build a pier that exceeds a certain size, you have to get a permit to do so. And you go to the DNR, and the DNR does its reasonable use analysis pursuant to the guidances or other rules and regulations that govern that decision-making process. And then once you receive that permit, you've got a certain period of time to build your pier. Either face of the permit rules tell you how much time you have to do that because it has an expiration date on it, or the default expiration date in the statute applies. And within that time frame, the DNR can rescind or modify the permit. But I don't read that statute as providing the DNR with open-ended authority whenever it wants to require a new permitter to come in and seek modification once the project is built. And that seems to be how you're reading it, and I'm looking for some authority for that reading.
Well, I don't think that statute has ever been the subject of litigation. And so we're writing from a blank slate. But I submit that we're 40 years out now from the original dredging permit. Lots of things change, particularly in the natural environment. And DNR has to retain the flexibility to adjust permits over time.
So you are contending that the enforcement action statute and the permit duration statute, really, which is the other one that you cited, provide the DNR with authority, open-ended authority, to require someone to submit a new permit application when they're not engaged in any new construction.
Right, and 30.03 is broader than violations of permits and statutes. 30.03, I believe, says DNR can bring enforcement action when it's detrimental to the public interest. Well, that's very broad. And here what we're saying is a 407-slip pier structure where the public access has been eliminated is detrimental to the public rights, and it's a misbalancing of the private and public rights, and it cannot be sustained by a consistent application to other riparians.
I have a question.
At some point in the past, the DNR has allowed these 400 slips. And maybe I'm making a wrong presumption, but I presume that their presumption being that the 400 slips were not going to cause damage to the resource. Now the ALJ says EPCA can only have 100 slips. Well, if there was no damage to the resource before, how is there damage? How does the same situation, only going from renters to owners, change the equation with respect to damage to the resource?
DNR has never contended that the resource is being damaged. DNR agreed that these 407 slips could remain as a marina. The whole issue is public access, and if the court were to go APCA's way, I think all the amici would make it very clear that we're going to see a torrent of conversions of marinas to dock dominiums, because, well, frankly, there's a lot of money to be made.
But I'm concerned about the authority that you are asking for DNR. There's 4,000 feet here, right, of frontage?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. For instance, a lot of counties in this state, I know in the county up north that I have 200-foot lot requirements, which would mean that there could, on a 4,000, if you've got 4,000 feet of frontage, you could have at most 20 individual homes. Now, DNR is allowing 100 slips. What's to stop, if we say that you've got the authority, what's to stop you from saying that you can only have 20 slips or 10 slips?
Those decisions made by DNR are subject to judicial review. And DNR has to justify their decisions, as they are in this case, on what the right number is. The problem, I would turn it around, if APCA is allowed to have 407 slips exclusively for private use on their frontage, what are all the other riparians around the state going to tell DNR? You've got to give us 100 or 200, we're going to see an explosion of demands for more concentrated structures in the waters. It's just not fair to let them have triple the amount they should have.
And they have triple because it's open to the public. That's the DNR's explanation.
Yes.
Thank you, Council. Mr. Kastner, you represent your amicus Wisconsin Builders Association. Tell us what you're going to argue, what your issue is, or issues, please.
Chief Justice Abrahamson, members of the court, on behalf of the Wisconsin Builders Association, I want to thank the court for giving us the opportunity to speak today. I also want to thank the Wisconsin Realtors Association for ceding us their time. I would like to talk about a lot of things, but I've noticed the light comes on fast, so I'm going to try to limit what I do to something I can finish.
That would not be the solution.
The first thing I want to address is the fact that the Court of Appeals decision can't stand without being changed. What it says is that these docominiums can't be allowed to exist because they create an expectation on the part of a riparian to the exclusive use of the water by his dock. The problem is every riparian, every residential condominium owner, every residential lot owner with a pier on water, every farmer with a half mile of frontage and a pier that he ties his rowboat up to, thinks justifiably that the water next to his dock is exclusively accessed by him.
Thinks that, but that's not the law.
No, he's absolutely entitled to that belief. And the reason he's entitled to that belief goes back to all of the jurisprudence of this state and of this country. In the Domo case, 1926, Domo or Damo versus Jans, it's cited in my brief and most of the others, the court said that exclusive access to the water is a valuable property right of a riparian. No other person can get to the water from a riparian's property. And that's very important in this case, because what DNR is trying to say is, well, EBCA, you have to let 280-some other boat owners get to the water. We're justifying that under the public trust.
You're talking about two different things here.
No.
Access to the water is not the same thing as right to put a dock on the water.
A riparian has the absolute right, as a riparian, to put a dock in the water. Domo says that as well.
Domo said that you have the riparian has the right of access.
He has the right to construct a pier or a wharf or a boom in aid of navigation. Now,
to that water. He has
the right to exclude everybody from using his dock. He has the exclusive right to prevent people from coming from the uplands over his land to reach the water. That's what Domo was about.
Does he have the exclusive right to prevent, let's say, I own a cottage on Bass Lake and have a pier. You know, there's Bass Lakes all over this state. And I have a dock there, and some boat comes over, doesn't touch my dock for some reason, it comes over, anchors 5 inches from my dock. Is that any violation of the law, any violation of property rights?
I believe that it might be. Oh. I don't know that there's any case on that.
What?
But a riparian has the right to exclude people from using his dock. Now, if all he's doing is fishing right next to the dock and your boat isn't there, my guess is that may be a lawful use of the public waters. And certainly the public has the right to use all of the waters around all of the docks at the Abbey. But the see, the riparian owns the exclusive access to the water provided by his dock. And another important thing that Domel says, and it said it about 80 years after the U.S. Supreme Court said it, if you take away a riparian's riparian rights, you owe just compensation, because riparian rights are property.
The size of the dock is subject to regulation, however.
Pardon?
The size of the dock is subject to reasonable regulation.
The state, as the guardian of the public trust, has the right, has the duty, to limit a riparian's access to that which is reasonable. That doesn't mean that the state has the right to decide whether it's reasonable to be a riparian, or that at the state's discretion, you can't get to the water. It means that if your dock extends too far out into the water, supposing everybody navigates up and down this lake 200 feet from the shoreline, and a riparian comes along and builds a dock 400 feet out into the lake, and now everybody has to go way out across to the other side of the lake to get where they want to go. The state has the duty to limit the riparian, but that right to limit him doesn't mean they tell him to take his dock down. And Chapter 30.13 specifically says that if a dock is too big, the municipality, by the way, not DNR, has the power to tell the riparian to remove that portion of the dock that's obstructing navigation. And that's an important point. DNR was not asked to be the person to decide that. The legislature told municipalities to decide how much is too far and gave municipalities the power to enforce the length that needs to be there in order to facilitate navigation. Now, all of these public trust rights evolve out of the state's role under the state constitution and the Northwest Treaty to assure that the waters of the state remain public highways forever free for use by the residents and other citizens of the United States. All of the rights ultimately attend to navigational rights. And somewhere along the line, we're confusing the idea that anything that relates to water relates to the public trust, that any public interest can be justified under the public trust. But that isn't true, because the Yates versus Milwaukee case, the one Mr. Schreiner cited earlier, from 150 years ago, the city of Milwaukee came in and ordered a dock removed, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, but you got to pay him. And Domel versus Jantz says, if you take away a riparian's property, you have to pay him. And it's always been the law of this country and of this state that if you take away a riparian's property, you have to pay him.
Well, what about this situation? I want to construct a dock that will house 50 boats, 50 slips. The DNR says, no, you can't do that if you're going to maintain private ownership in all of them and not rent them out to the public. But if you will rent out 25 of them to the public, you can have the other 25. Now, are you saying that that's a taking?
No, I'm not.
Well, then how does that differ from this case? Because the DNR here is saying you can have 100, but you can't have 400 unless 300 of them are open to the public.
In RW Docks and the Palazzola case decided the same day, and the Tahoe Sierra case decided by the U.S. Supreme Court last week, the U.S. Supreme Court said that it is very important not to confuse the laws applicable to a regulatory taking with those applicable to a physical take. EBCA has 407 docks. They exist. They cost money to build. They cost money to maintain. They pay property taxes based upon the value of them. They are property. DNR is saying that 287 of them are at risk. And if you don't play the game the way we want, you have to take them out. And I'm saying if you take the 287 docks out, that's a take. And that is a physical take, not a regulatory take. It's an entirely different question whether or not the state grants you a permit in the first place to build something than it is if you already have it and the state is trying to take it away.
Maybe then the Court of Appeals is correct that a dock dominion is per se contrary to the public trust doctrine, because all APCA had before the dock dominion is a right to be a marina under the statutes and regs. And now, if a dock dominion right is conferred, that sets up a taking, which limits the ability of DNR to protect the public trust.
What you just said, Justice Bradley, is that if I create property and if the government at some point in the future deems it necessary to take it, it would create a duty on the part of the state to pay me compensation. Therefore, the public interest compels us to prevent anybody from having property. That is not...
Okay. If I said that, I'd take it back.
Okay.
I want to follow through with a question to my question to you a moment ago. You said that this is different from the hypothetical that I gave you because APCA already had 400 slips. Now, those 400 slips that they had were... They had them because, at least to some extent, 200 or 300 of them were going to be rented out. In other words, it almost sounds like, to me, like these were conditional permits. It'd be like me, your argument sounds to me like, say I wanted to go on Justice Wilcox's land to hunt. And he says, you can do that. You can come onto my land to hunt. So I go onto his land to hunt. Then next year I decide to start a vegetable garden on his land. He says, whoa, I didn't give you permission to have a vegetable garden. I gave you permission to hunt. And the same thing here. They didn't give APCA permission to have 400 private slips. They gave APCA permission to have some slips that were going to be rented out to the public.
No, Justice Babbage, I disagree. They gave them a permit for 407 slips, and I defy anybody to pull out the permit and see anywhere on any of those permits that it says this permit is being granted contingent upon your agreement to rent these to the public. Let me give you an example of these facts a slightly different way. What if the Abbey was a terrible manager? And what if the 407 tenants of the Abbey's rented marina hated the way it was being managed so badly that they got together and said, let's buy this thing and take it over. And they would be converting it from a rental marina to a private marina. Does that mean that the marina occupied by the same 407 boat owners the next day is for some reason illegal when it was legal the day before? What DNR is saying, well, 120 of you can do it, but the other 287 of you have to hit the bricks.
Let me ask you this. Suppose this was undeveloped land, and they were going to develop it into condominiums, or dockominiums, whatever you prefer. And they have to go to the DNR to get permits, right?
Yes.
Okay. Could the DNR say that reasonable use for private ownership here is only 70 slips, but reasonable use, if you open it up to the public, would be 170 slips. So we'll give you 100 slips if you open them to the public. In other words, I'm asking you, can the DNR, in determining whether the grant permits, take into account public use and access?
I do not believe that public access is a component of the public trust. I believe, in fact, that it is specifically contrary to the rights of a riparian. Can DNR, acting under the police power of the state of Wisconsin or under the powers granted to the state by the public trust, limit the number of people that use a body of water? I don't think it can limit the number of people who use a body of water under the public trust, but I believe it can under the police power. More importantly, I believe that the local unit of government that has to approve the zoning to create this project is the body that's going to decide how much intensity will be allowed. Because you not only need a permit from DNR, you need a permit from the local unit of government. And the last part of my response to that, Justice Abrahamson, is that 30.13 regulates docks, and 30.12 regulates permits, and 227.11 regulates DNR. 227.11 says the DNR has the power to adopt administrative rules as long as the boundaries of those rules can be clearly ascertained from the statute authorizing the creation of the rule. When you look at 30.12 or 30.13, it authorizes DNR to adopt regs relating boathouses, and it authorizes them to adopt regs relating the construction of platforms for birds, but it does not specifically authorize the creation of regulations regarding how many docks or how long those docks can be. I see my time is up, and I'll...
You may complete that sentence.
Thank you. What it says is... Well, DNR is exercising a power that is not within the four corners of 30.13 or 30.12, and the Elroy case, which I can provide a cite to if the court wants, is a case in which it says DNR, any administrative agency, only has the power that can be clearly ascertained from the statute that it's attempting to enforce. And if there's any reasonable doubt as to whether it has the power, the court is compelled to rule against the conference of that power. There's nothing that says DNR.
Chief, may I ask a quick question?
Mr. Brandon.
Thank you. In the earlier response to the chief's question, caused me to wonder, is your position that the riparian right of reasonable access to the lake is not subordinate to the public trust doctrine? Is that your position?
No, it is not. What I said was that a riparian has an absolute right to access the water. The state has the right, in the interest of protection of navigation, to limit that right to that which is reasonably necessary to accomplish the goal of accessing the water. Now, the troubling part about this case is that DNR has said there's no problem with the navigation, there's no problem with the flowage of the water under these docks, there's no impact on scenic beauty. The only problem has to do with access by the public, and access by the public, I have to vigorously disagree with DNR, is not part of the public trust doctrine of this state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kasdan. Mr. O'Connor, representing the Wisconsin Association of Lakes.
Good morning, members of the court. It's my privilege this morning to represent the Wisconsin Association of Lakes, which urges the court to affirm the conclusion of the Court of Appeals that condoing publicly owned waters is by itself inconsistent with the trust doctrine because it exceeds the reasonable use rights of a riparian property owner. It may be ironic that a statewide association whose membership includes thousands of lakefront property owners and riparian owners, should be encouraging the court not to expand the legal rights of riparian owners in the way that ABCA seeks to have them expanded. But over the years, our members have found that a strong trust doctrine benefits both waterfront values and the interests in the public in our waters. The issue that I think in the discussion this morning so far has been overlooked is the limitation on riparian rights that's expressed by the term reasonable use. In DNR's guidance documents, and in much of the conversation this morning, reasonable use has been used as a term of art to mean the relationship between the extent of shoreland frontage owned by a riparian property owner and the number of boat slips that they may be entitled to. But I submit to the court that decisions of this court for a generation have made the concept of reasonable use far broader than that. In the case of Moses versus Chain of Lakes, this court recognized that the reasonable use of a riparian is something that is based on the conditions of the situation. It is not simply a placeholder for this ratio of water frontage to land. And it is the Wisconsin Association of Lakes' view that the particular form of a condominium that's been employed by ABCA reflects an excessive interpretation of the idea of riparian, reasonable riparian use, and that it goes far beyond anything that has ever been recognized by the legislature or by this court as one of the rights that comes with the concept of reasonable use of riparian rights. At the very heart of this case is the essential character of riparian rights. Wall views these rights as sticks in a bundle, sticks that represent the right of a private owner of waterfront property to use, in certain limited ways, publicly owned surface waters and their underlying beds. This isn't about how I use my land. It's about how I use everybody else's property. Riparian rights don't have legal descriptions like tracts of real estate. Although there's a general conception of a riparian zone located adjacent to a waterfront parcel in order to protect adjoining riparians and to prevent the intrusion of structures too far out into the navigable area of a water body, riparian rights are not legal descriptions. What ABCA has done through the particular form of a condominium declaration that they have employed is to, in effect, incorporate within the bounds of the condominium legal description a very substantial area composed of water and air, which are owned by the public. The legal description associated with the condominium development includes this bay of Geneva Lake. The declaration, the condominium declaration, and the plat associated with that, then subsectors that area defined out on the water into small postcard-sized lots, 10 by 30, 20 by 40 feet on a side, and presumes that it is within the scope of ABCA's riparian rights as the owner of some adjacent strip of upland to determine the boundaries of the water that is subject to their riparian use, to subsector that region. Yes, Justice Bross.
How would the description of how would the description of someone who rents a boat slip be different?
I think rental would raise a very different issue, Your Honor, because what rental involves is a temporary use that provides an opportunity for non-riparians to have a boat slip that provides access to water. We have a statute in Wisconsin that prohibits the conveyance of riparian rights by an easement or a similar conveyance. That does not, a conveyance is a defined term, and there are statutes that address what a conveyance means, but it doesn't mean a short-term rental. I think in a rental situation, you would see the owner of a marina would simply designate as the property subject to the lease agreement to be boat slip number 6 at the dock.
But isn't it true that people who rent these slips, at least at the harbor here, tend to just roll right over and could be there for many, many years?
There was some evidence that was developed in the administrative hearings that there is a that it is not uncommon for people who make short-term rental use of a boat slip to renew their lease. But I don't think that changes the essential point that Mr. Green was making on behalf of the state, which is that under ABCA's scheme, what you're doing is allocating all 407 boat slips to riparian owners. You're not providing an opportunity for non-riparian owners, whether it's for a single-year lease or a lease that is renewed for a period of years, to have access to the water. And I think that the state correctly states that a reasonable use is can be significantly greater with respect to the number of boat slips that can be permissible, where those boat slips will provide the countervailing public benefit of permitting non-riparian owners to have access to the water.
Now, you and the DNR disagree. The DNR says they can have condominiums on the boat slips.
It's not the first mistake the department has made.
Now, I understand that. You're not usually on the same side as the department, but here you are partially on the same side as the department. But your position is no condos in boat slips.
I think the Court of Appeals reached the right result. If I had written their decision, I would have written it differently.
What would you have done?
I would have identified the specific problem that this particular condominium development poses, and that is that rather than, like the condominium in which Judge Crooks apparently owns property, where the riparian rights are simply held as common elements of the condominium,
An internal decision
is made by the unit owners association about who uses what boat slip. What this documentium development does is to take specific rectangles of the public water and then sell interests that says forevermore the owner of unit number 407 gets to use this specific geographical rectangle.
But Judge Brown, in his dissent, answered that at least somewhat persuasively. He says you can't convey what you don't own. He says so the Court of Appeals decision amounts to nothing more than saying because there's confusion out there in the minds of, or maybe not even confusion, but misunderstanding as to what it is they own, that's no problem of ours or the DNR or the state. He says ABCA can't convey that little slip on the dock. How do you answer that? They can't convey that little slip contained within the dock.
But isn't the mistake that Judge Brown made, Justice Bablich, in failing to recognize that if we permit the type of condominium development that ABCA has propounded, that what we will do is to fractionalize the water, break up into tiny segments the riparian zone. You referred to county ordinances that require a 200-foot frontage. In this case, these 407 condominium riparians will each own something around 12 feet. And once they get a deed to their unit, that deed will make them the king of that manor. They will, under the condominium statutes, those units that include the exclusive right to that particular boat slip is the is an entire and separate interest in property for all purposes, for taxation, and I think that's where you raise the issue that for the state, the practical ability of the Department of Natural Resources to effectively administer its duties under the trust doctrine will be greatly complicated by this proliferation. There's a statute a couple of chapters after the condominium statute that is called the Timeshare Ownership Act, Chapter 707. Now, if you can take the water adjacent to your property, divide it up into 407 slots, and convey deeds that grant valuable interests in those, there is no reason that you couldn't take each of those 407 units and convert those into separate one-week timeshare units, and then DNR could ride herd on, I think it's 21,164 new riparians. I don't think they're going to be able to effectively do that. Furthermore, if you come to a situation like the fact situation that was presented in the RW Docks case, where a change in the ecosystem, a change in the nature of the water body, requires a recognition that 407 boat slips is too many, we need to reduce it, what you're going to do is you're going to cut the legs off of the individuals who happen to own the units that are in the offending area. And I think that raises very significant takings issues, and the participation of the Builders Association, the materials that they've put together in their brief, certainly underscore that there is not uniform agreement that having a strong announcement from this court constituting dicta, announcing that the owners of these dominiums should watch out because they're not going to be entitled to takings, is a sufficient shield against that problem. So
I don't think that that's a sufficient shield.
I don't think it's a sufficient protection, Your Honor. I think you'll find that if in the future it is determined that, like RW Docks, the number of boat slips in this little enlargement of Lake Geneva need to be reduced in number, reconfigured, the scope changed, I think what you'll find is that attorneys representing those slip owners will assert takings rights, and they will be in a situation unlike RW Docks where they will have lost substantially all of the value in their property.
Could I ask you if nothing changed from the former situation and the DNR came along and determined that there should be only 250 boat slips, would APCA be able to say that's a taking?
Certainly they would be able to claim that, Your Honor. I don't know what the outcome would be, but without wading into that mess of the takings jurisprudence in this area, the point that I would make is that riparian property owners' rights or privileges in the waters that adjoin their property have to be reasonable. In order to be reasonable, they can't confound the practical ability of the state to continue to carry out its duty as trustee of the public waters. And the mere specter, whether that issue is properly before this court or not, of takings, I think just underscores the problem that's presented. But even if there weren't a taking, I believe that the type of dominium employed by APCA that specifies these very small areas of public water and sells interests in them goes way too far to be considered a reasonable use by a riparian of the adjoining public lands.
So how would you write an opinion that was as narrow as you seem to want it?
I would hold that it is beyond the reasonable use of riparian property, and therefore in violation of the public interest in the water.
But what is
to take any portion of a real estate description on the land and to associate to subdivide or sectorize any water that adjoins that. In other words, if you want to buy riparian rights, you buy a parcel of real estate which is conveyable under whatever is the prevailing law. And when you convey that parcel of real estate, you get all the riparian rights that are associated with it. I think that policy reflects the legislature's policy that is set out in section 30.133 of the statutes, which I believe was an effort by the legislature to prevent this sectorizing or breaking down of riparian rights.
No freestanding docominiums.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We now have rebuttal. Mr. Schreiner, you have 5 minutes. No one should be feel compelled to use the time.
Judge, I'm always conscious of the of crunching on people's lunch. I appreciate you listening to me, and I hope you will for 5 more minutes. I intend to take every second of it. I want to answer, first of all, a question that maybe if I can, just respond to some questions that were asked by my colleagues. Can someone use water next to a dock? Yes. The right that a riparian has to put a dock in the water and own the dock is a property right. It is the right to occupy that space and to use it for tying up a dock. You don't own the water, you own the right to occupy the water with your boat. If your boat is out on the lake somewhere and you're fishing, someone else can come and fish there. They can swim there. They can fish under your dock, as bass fishermen do under my dock every morning. And they have every right to do that. The fact that the dock is there doesn't mean I own the water. Now, a couple of questions that one that Justice Bradley asked and then one that Justice Babich asked, it seems to me, let me get to the heart of what my argument is with Mr. Green. Some of these others get me exercised, but let me say, Justice Bradley, you asked, or you put it in the sense, isn't DNR saying all that APCA had, and you said this to Mr. Kasner, was the right to be a marina under the statutes and regulations? Well, guess what? There isn't anything in the statutes about marinas. The DNR has made this up. The regulation you cited, 326, was adopted 20 years after these piers were put in at the Abbey. There is nothing. I've got the permits right here, and they're in the record. There is no, Justice Babich, you said this sounds to me like these were conditional permits. They weren't conditional permits. There is no reference in the permits to maintaining this as whatever a public marina would be, to renting. There is nothing like that. Now, if you look at what the ALJ did in this case, he issued a conditional permit. You want to see what a conditional permit looks like? Anytime the DNR sneezes and changes its mind about what the public policy of the state would be, let's go back and look at it again. It isn't in these. It was never conceived of as being in these. You asked Chief Justice about whether the DNR could say ab initio that X slips, I forgot what number you used, would be reasonable for a public marina, but X minus Y, some smaller number, would be reasonable for a private marina. And I answer the question no. And I answer the question no because, first of all, how many are public and how many are private has nothing to do with the use of the water. It has to do with access to the water. There is no public trust right. And that's all the DNR is exercising in 30. The public trust right has nothing to do with access to the water. It's a good thing. Could the legislature enact a rule? Could the legislature pass a law about public marinas? Yes, it could. It has the plenitude of power. It has the plenitude of police power. Let me finish my point. If it were to do so on a prospective basis and to say this is what a public marina is, then you can have your marina on these terms, but that isn't what it's done. It hasn't done it. And the DNR won't find it in the public trust doctrine. There aren't cases saying this. And let me just say one other thing. on reasonable use, who can be against reasonable use? Who can be against public rights? We should be reasonable, we should be public, and we shouldn't act detrimentally to the public interest. Reasonable use in the cases, and you've got to look at it, and the reasonable use is as between riparians. Now, does the DNR carry out this reasonable use as between riparians? If my property is at an angle and my putting a pier out in front will block your ability to put a pier, sure it does. The legislature has given it that authority under 3012. But that isn't to say that reasonable use has ever been sanctioned by either the legislature or this court for the DNR to allocate as between the rights of riparians and the rights of non-riparians. That simply isn't what it's meant. It never has meant. This would be the first time a court of this state, the first time this court has ever done it. I'm sorry. I should have taken your question.
Oh, that's fine. A couple things crossed my mind. One is the prohibition against conveyance of riparian rights. As I see this case, it is, in essence, the conveyance of riparian rights.
You're talking about 30.155?
Oh, Your Honor, 3.3, yeah.
That was whatever it was. That was a response to one of this court's cases, which, by the way, is, I think, a correct statement of the law of public trust doctrine and the law of riparian rights. What it says is no easements or similar conveyances. This is not an easement. The essence of an easement is to separate out the right to cross the land from ownership of the land. Nobody gets a right under this condominium declaration of access to the pier except somebody who has a fee ownership in the land in common. Of this 20 acres of land, of this 8/10 of a mile of frontage, this is not an insubstantial piece of property, upland. And therefore, Your Honor, we think that doesn't apply at all. The ALJ so held, and just as Mr. O'Connor says, every once in a while the DNR gets it right. I have to admit that occasionally the ALJ got it right. Not very often in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Chief?
Yes. Justice Prosser, do you have a question? I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chief Justice. First of all, I would like to respond just briefly to Mr. Kasner's citation of the Yates case. 1870, yes, the court did say there would have to be compensation, but the whole premise of that decision, when you read it, and if you read the citation to it in the later case of Scranton versus Wheeler, what really troubled the Supreme Court was that, in their view, the city of Milwaukee had acted arbitrarily and just drawn a line in the river and said your pier can't extend beyond that. And it's the arbitrary nature of that action which I think was the reason for that result. The Damel case, we've had cites to that, but there have been selective cites because Damel itself specifically reiterates the qualified, limited nature of riparian rights and the rights to place structures. That's all we're saying, is that you've got your rights. You've got your riparian rights, but where they stop is reasonable use. And beyond that,
You have no entitlement, and there can be no taking as a matter of law. The ALJ found, as a matter of fact, that everybody understood from the very beginning, 1962, that this was a rental facility. There was no debate about that. I think it would be a miscarriage of justice at this point to let them convert that into something other than what it has always been for the first 35 years. It would be kind of like saying the Vilas Park, which was filled in for the use of the public, part of the bed of Lake Wingra. Well, the city of Madison decided to sell that off or wall it off and make it a private enclave for people. People would scream bloody murder. There's a difference between providing public access to the water and limiting it to exclusive private access. To me, the bottom line with the documentums is they're okay as long as they don't themselves expand the nature of the riparian right. You can't multiply and increase your riparian right by selling condominiums. You ought to, at the end of the process, you ought to have the same use rights that you did before you started. And that's what we're saying. And in response to a question very early on, which seems like a long time ago for all of us, I'm sure, the question was, if you started from scratch at this frontage and you applied for a permit, would you get 407 slips? No way. There is no question that you would never get anywhere near 400 slips. As the ALJ found, you'd probably get in the range of 80. And he bumped that up 50% to 120. So the question, again, comes down to me is, if we treat APCA this way, if we let them have 400, how do we deal with the multitudes of other riparians who want consistent treatment and will demand consistent treatment from DNR? How is DNR supposed to keep a handle on the ballooning, exploding requests for more and more structures and more boats on the waters?
I'm somewhat troubled by this argument that you've made twice about what other riparians are going to think about them. It seemed to me if you premise that everyone should have equal treatment, you would force them to reduce the number of slips. How can you permit them to have 407 slips on 4,000 feet of lakeshore when other riparians can't do that?
If they're a marina, that's the key. If they're a marina, they're entitled to it. If they're not a marina, they get 120.
You mean if I have 4,000 feet and I say I'm going to have a marina, you're going to give me 407 slips?
Not necessarily. Depends upon the lake, upon the traffic, the congestion, the need for public access, and so forth. You're not entitled to become a marina just because you want to.
So, unlike the lake associations, my understanding that you would allow freestanding documentums?
We would, with the caveat that I said before. But yes, in and of themselves. And I guess I would just end by referring the court back to the administrative law judge's decision, which I think was very thorough and well-reasoned and balanced.
Throughout your brief, you kept talking about how we should write a strong opinion so that there can be no question that these owners of the slips really won't own the water, et cetera. But the point that the Lake Association brings out is that this is an incredibly, to the layperson, it's going to be meaningless. I mean, even if you attach a copy of our opinion to every deed, people are going to believe they bought this water. And how do you answer his argument that this is just really this is asking too much of the DNR?
I guess my response is, could it cause a royal headache for a lot of us? Yes. Do we think that is a sufficient legal pillar to justify the decision below? We don't think so. But yes, we think there will be headaches from this.
You've already issued permits for documenting complexes elsewhere.
For this one, yes.
Well, for others around the state.
Anyway, that's what it says in the brief, in APCA's brief.
There are exceedingly few documentiums in the state of Wisconsin.
I thought the facts in the RW docs was that already a couple hundred had been sold. I might be wrong in that.
Yes, Justice Bradley, that's the one that apparently slipped under the radar back in the 1970s. But there are very, very few of those, as far as I'm aware, and the record of the hearing, I think, supports that. There are very few now, but there's a lot waiting in the wings for this decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Kastner.
Thank you, Justice Abrahamson. First of all, there is nothing wrong with the way these condominiums are created. I'm a condominium practitioner, and I read this decision of the Court of Appeals that talks about illegal fiction, and I'm greatly troubled because I have no idea where the line between fact and fiction lies. There is no guidance for drawing that line, and that's because there is nothing wrong with these condominiums. This court needs to say that. Second of all, DNR has no authority to regulate condominium conversions under any language in Chapter 30. But it's doing so. There's nothing in the law of condominiums that tells me in order to create a condominium, one of the things I have to do is run over to DNR and get their okay on it. Most of the riparian condominiums in this state do exactly the same thing that ABCA did. Most of you, if you sit down and read the condominium documents that you have, are going to discover that you have a limited common element boat dock, which says, there's this dock in the water, and it shows up on the plat, and unit number X is yours. And that attaches to the ownership of your condo. Now, that condo is a bigger cubicle of air than the cubicle of air at ABCA, but it's just as much a cubicle of air. And there's nothing in our laws that tells somebody that they did it wrong. And it's not a matter of slipping it under the radar screen. This is what the law of this state told everybody they could do, and that's what ABCA is attempting to do, and that's what ABCA has a right to do.
Well, if I own slip 47 because I have condominium unit 47, do I own slip 47? Do I own the air and the water?
The condominium documents no doubt tell you that you own the riparian rights that attach to Unit 47, including the right to access the water on the slip that has been attached to Unit 47. And you don't own the water as a condominium owner any more than I do as a farmer.
So the answer to his question is they don't say that you own the slip.
They say that you own the right to use the slip. Just like every other riparian has the right to use the water. That's part of the property that a riparian acquires. It's why they pay so much money to be riparians.
Well, we accept if he has a condo on the 200th floor that he is a riparian owner. But suppose there is no condo and that the strip of land is only 30 feet wide, and the only thing is right up against the highway. And what it does is just gives you the right to cross that land and use that slip. That would be okay, right?
Well, Judge, Justice Abrahamson, there is, I believe it's Borsellino, it's a case in which a riparian owned a strip of land 8 feet wide to the water. And the courts allowed him to build a dock where the dock and the boat were wider than 8 feet. But as a riparian, it was determined that he had the right of reasonable access.
Well, that would be an okay condominium project, as I've set it forth.
If you own land.
We're going to own about a mile.
Pardon?
1 mile along the lake, 30 feet deep. Piece of property. I want to put up 400 slips, just like APCA. Is that okay?
you'd have to get it approved by the local unit of government.
All right.
And that's where the power of regulation
is. This local unit of government is really going to like it because it really is going to be a wonderful tax base, so I don't have any problem with them. I've overcome that hurdle. Can I do it?
I think the
property. Let me just ask you, as a condominium property lawyer, could you draft that for me?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the reason it's not a the reason I don't expect to see that, Justice Abrahamson, is that if I owned a mile of frontage on a lake, the last thing in the world I would do is separate off an 8-foot or 10-foot strip of land along the water and take all of this valuable property and turn it into non-riparian property, because all of the riparian rights that all of that other property adjacent to it would have would now be lost. There's no economic basis for doing that. But yes, it could be done. And one of the problems we have is that DNR has the power the legislature gave it. But I don't see anything in the statute that gives DNR the power to compel riparians to let the public access the water over their land. But that's what they're attempting to do here. I don't see anything in Chapter 30 that says that DNR will be able to set the rents that a riparian marina can charge to its tenants. But DNR is claiming that power. They don't have that power. DNR is claiming that they have the right to say that you can create a marina if you want to rent it, but you can't create a private yacht club anymore. And that's not in the statute either. My time is up. Thank you.
Mr. Cass, Mr. O'Connor.
Mr. Castor's been discoursing in part on the law of the law of condominiums in Wisconsin. I want to make an important point about that law. In order to declare real estate as a condominium under the Wisconsin statute, all of the owners have to join in the execution and recording of the declaration of condominium. Here, under ABCA's scheme, the real property included within the legal description includes a portion of Geneva Lake. And based on their ownership of some adjacent riparian land, ABCA contends that they have established that foundation requirement and that all of the owners of that property have joined in the condominium, although parts are owned by the people of this state. Mr. Schreiner made an incorrect statement of the law that I want to correct. He said that riparian use is a concept that has to do with regulating rights between riparian owners. I would refer the court to the case of Moses versus Chain of Lakes. That's the case where this court determined that the State Department of Veterans Affairs was within its reasonable use rights as a riparian owner when it installed a system to withdraw lake water to use to provide drinking supply water for its facility at King. And it was not a question of balancing rights between riparians. It was a question of where riparian rights bump up against the public interest. Justice Bradley, I think you made the correct statement. The interests that these purchasers obtain is, for all intents and purposes, an easement. The condominium real property law makes it quite clear. Under Chapter 703 of the statutes, a limited common element is a right of one unit owner or more, but less than all of them, to the exclusive use of a portion of the common elements. This is exactly what the unit owners in ABCA's condominium obtain.
You think that's barred by 30.133?
Yes, I do. ABCA gave birth to the Abbey Harbor condominium during the roaring 1990s, during the heyday of the dot-com mania. Do you remember that? Nothing really could go too far. And I urge the court to back off that contemporary history and take a much longer look at the very careful protection that this court, particularly as an institution of Wisconsin government, has given to the public's interest in our lakes and streams since statehood. Mr. Justice Vinge, in the Diana Shooting Club case, said that the trust doctrine was established to provide the fullest opportunities for the public to use and enjoy their waters, that it should not be construed narrowly. It should be construed broadly in order to provide the maximum opportunities for the public.
Conclude. If you prevail, what's the practical effect for APCA?
I think that APCA will have some internal issues to work out between the condominium developer and the purchasers and the title insurance companies.
Well, will they be allowed to keep 407 slips? Or?
If the Court of Appeals decision is affirmed by this court, the entire dock network in the Abbey Harbor will be an unpermitted structure that would require a permit. And I think they would need to address that by proposing a project in that, using their riparian property, that would be within their reasonable use and that would be could be permitted by the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Connor, and thank all the counsels, Kastner, Green, and Schreiner, for an excellent argument in what appears, on the surface at least, a complicated case. Thank you, counsel.